This podcast is brought to you by Podomatic, one of the internet's leading podcast hosting providers. Podomatic will give you all the publication tools you need to make your podcast simple, easy, and fun. To start your free account today, just visit podomatic.com. You can also upgrade to a pro account for as little as $9.99 per month. So make your podcasting experience worthwhile and make it with Podomatic. Once again, you're listening to the Potter Pensive Podcast, episode 54. And this week, we've got myself, Adam, as well as Heather. Say hello.
Hello.
And Sarah.
Hello.
And Chio.
Hello.
Finally, you're back for a regular episode, buddy.
Yes. Finally.
About time, man.
Right? That's about time. We're gonna get, I was looking at the chapters we're doing today, and we are kind of right. This is kind of our last regular chapters episode, I guess.
Yeah.
You could say
like this
that.
Is the last episode where we're focusing solely on the chapters.
Yeah.
And then next week we've got our movie commentary, and then that's it. We've got the final episode after that.
It's true.
Hooray.
Hooray, yeah.
It's kind
yes,
of
you,
a
Heather.
Hooray.
Kind of a hooray, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty busy with stuff, and I mean, as we all are, so. I mean, Sarah, you've got a wedding to plan, and Chio's got work, and Heather's got, you know, her life.
Don't even know what I do you? Yeah, he's like, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah. Though, that next week we're going to be like, oh, no, this is the last one. No.
Yeah.
The next one's the last one. Yeah. I know. But it'll be good. Hopefully we'll do it justice. We've got a really cool list of all of the favorite moments from the podcast over the last 4 years. And some of them I actually forgot about, which is kind of nice. It was kind of a cool reminder to see those. And we also have a couple more chicken soups, which is cool. And yeah, I think it'll be a pretty satisfying finish to this 4-year project that we've all been working on.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get into some listener feedback here. We have one email this week from Alan, and he says, "Hi, Pensivers. A few weeks," and it's a pretty long email, so I'm just going to kind of summarize it up here, and then we can discuss it. He says, "Hi, Pensivers. A few weeks back, you asked about the topic of slavery, in particular, house elf slavery. And the missive you read on your podcast excused slavery as an acceptable practice, as long as it was culturally smiled upon. I would posit to you that the majority of instances of slavery practiced in the real world against real people in the past and present are tacitly, if not implicitly, accepted by the cultures that surround those people. And those instances were and are wrong. As much as it pains me to agree with the swotty Hermione Granger, slavery is wrong. Slavery is dehumanizing. If the term dehumanizing is too fantasy racist, then I'll call it depersonalizing or de-individuating." Oh, this guy, he's got a really good vocab.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically he says slavery is wrong. Then he says, on an earlier podcast, Heather had criticized the quote, romance of the Twilight novels because of the sick codependency at its center. Do you remember that, Heather?
Yeah.
Okay. He says, however, Edward and Bella are depicted as wanting that kind of relationship just as much as house elves are depicted as wanting to be slaves. It is very, very possible for people to want things that are bad. Desires do not sanctify everything. When I think of the worst pain in life, I know that it was a somewhat predictable result of pursuing something I shouldn't have. A natural consequence of doing something wrong simply because I wanted it. No, not like house elf deserving to be punished." And then towards the end here, he basically says, that slavery is wrong no matter what cultural context you put it in. And then he ends his email saying, aside from you and your listeners that bother giving feedback being disgusting garbage children that would happily see the rest of the world enslaved, I am a fan of the podcast and I'm sorry to see it end. Maybe you could review Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, or Tales of Beetle the Bard, or Quidditch Through the Ages, or, hilariously, Casual Vacancy? Don't let it end, guys. NBOT. So, thank you for that, you know, the light end to your email, Alan. Yeah. That was really great.
Awesome.
did he just call us garbage children and ask us to do a favor for him continuing the podcast?
No, he said,
while I agree that slavery is not a good thing and I am in no way endorsing it in the real world, And he has a very good point about the Edward and Bella relationship in Twilight and how that's not healthy, even though they may desire it. I'm still not endorsing slavery in the real world, and I don't believe that I ever supported it in the Wizarding world as well.
Okay. So what? I'm just trying to remember like what our conversation was, because I think that was like 2 or 3 episodes ago that we talked about that, maybe.
But that must have been without me. I don't remember
which
that
means
one.
That it was like 2 months ago.
Yeah, which means it was like 2 months ago because we had a little bit of a break there. But I remember us talking about how, we were talking about house elves and whether they should be enslaved or whatever. And I think we came up with the idea that, you know, house elves, they want to be enslaved, so that makes it, you know, good. But I mean, like, we weren't endorsing slavery.
No,
I guess.
Not at all. Yeah.
No, like, we're not saying slavery is good. We were saying that the house elves view it as good, and therefore, you know, they want it. Right?
Yes.
Like, and I think as long as they are exposed to education on the other like side about the life without slavery, like such as Dobby, with him, he gets paid for the work that he does, and he enjoys the work, and he enjoys getting paid for it, like. And if they know about them, they can have a choice between, hey, I want to, like, I find it insulting for you to give me money, or else they could choose to have the money.
I think
we got to this consensus that, you know, they should be given the choice. But what Hermione fails to grasp is that, you know, some of them do want to serve wizards. This enslavement were there was, you know, used by wizards, by pure-blooded wizards. But, you know, maybe house elves simply don't see it like that. Maybe they see, you know, it's their life's duty to, you know, serve wizards because that's what they always did. And, you know, I think it's something that, okay, this is fiction, you know, of course. And
yeah.
It's... like he said right at the beginning, you know, when we're talking about humans and real life, of course, it's not acceptable at all. People should be given their choices. But we are talking about fiction here, and what Hermione fails to do is to see house elves, you know, from what their view of the world is. Just like, you know, our listener is doing, like we are humans. But we would have to be able to see through Dobby's, not Dobby's, because, you know, Dobby's, he's happy being a free elf. But, for example, what was Winky? Winky was happy, you know, serving her
master. Yeah, she was content with that.
Yeah, and it would just be mean to, like, what Hermione was trying to do was force them into freedom, which I don't think it's acceptable as well.
She tried to trick them into freedom, moreover.
Yeah.
By hiding rats around the room.
Well, either way, they would be...
I think it's important for there to be government regulations regarding treatment of house elves if house elf slavery does continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because then, without that, you have situations like Voldemort using Creature to transport him to the island where he has his Horcrux and, like, to poison him. And with Winky being forced to keep like be permanently tied to Barty Crouch Jr., like those things are unacceptable.
Yes,
at all, even if the house elf does choose to serve.
Yes. So Alan, us disgusting garbage children, in no way We in no way endorse slavery ourselves. Like, that's ridiculous. Just, you know, say putting that out there, that's absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, like what we were saying.
And I do stand my ground because, you know, if Hermione had tricked one of the house elves, she would be making them do something that they didn't want to do, which is basically what, you know, enslavement's all about. She would be forcing that onto them. So it's kind of tricky. It's, you know, it's fiction, and it's even kind of, you know, there are some funny moments with Dobby because he's linked to the Malfoys by magic. So he wanted to punish himself. And we do get some comic moments from that. But still, you know, it doesn't really compare to real life, but I do stand my ground with, you know, house elves being given the choice, and if they do want to, you know, work as slaves, then, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Though slaves is not...
It all comes down to education and choice.
Yeah,
that's right. Yes. That it does. Yeah.
Always education and choice.
Yeah, that's what it is. But yeah, thank you very much, Ellen. That was a really... it was actually, I think it was a great email. It was thought provoking. it like totally countered what, or you thought it totally countered what we said. So that was great. Thank you very much.
It's awesome.
All right. So let's jump right into chapters now. So who's got the first one?
That's me.
Chapter 32. The Elder Wand.
All right. So this is the Elder Wand. Now, we just ended with the Battle of Hogwarts, right? So Fred just died, I guess, to put it put it as bluntly as you can. Fred died. Very sad. Very sad. So, it kind of reminds me of war that you see on movies. I've never really been in war, so I can't talk. But that you see in movies, like Platoon or whatever, you know what I mean? Where you have that person, which is Harry at this point, who needs to keep moving, and they know that they need to stop like emotion from happening, as far as he knows there's nothing he can do for Fred, but there's still a fight happening. There's still something going on.
Yes.
So, you know, there's nothing he can do, but Percy is laying over Fred, obviously quite upset. Harry, again, being the ever, he really does, you know, in he's good under pressure. His brain really does come up with, you know, his way of getting Percy to kind of come to terms with, hey, we need to move from where we are, was by helping move Fred's body. So I think Percy kind of saw that he was moving Fred's body and helped him, and that kind of come to. One thing I forgot to mention is while this big hole was just blasted, the blasted in the castle, and that's what I believe killed Fred. There's big spiders coming in, like Aragog's descendants are coming in through the walls, which just gives me the heebie-jeebies. Could you imagine?
Scary.
So like the pressure's really on to get the heck out of there. And Harry knows that. So, Harry,
chapter, is this the chapter where, maybe you're getting this. I think this is the chapter where Trelawney throws the crystal balls at people.
Yes. Yes. Which in the book, it's not quite as... Wait, it is in the...
No, it's not. It's not in the movie.
Oh.
No.
Dang, I had a great picture in my head, though.
You know, I think it would look so funny if it was in the movie, to be honest.
But Emma Thompson was working on her own creation at the time.
That's right. So. I think she was doing Nanny McPhee.
She was doing Nanny McPhee, too. So she, understandably, she didn't want to go back when she was busy with, you know, her baby, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, very understandable.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Okay, so they put Fred's body in a little nick somewhere so that he'll be as safe as possible. And
that's so sad.
I know, it really is. Percy sees Rockwood and he starts taking off after him, like, you know, yelling at him. Now, was it Rockwood? Rockwood didn't cause the blast, right? He was just angry
at
Percy and was ready to...
Yeah, no, I think Rookwood is the one that caused...
Or Rookwood, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, whatever. Rookwood, he was the one that caused the blast, wasn't it?
Like, okay.
It was Fred and Percy, and they were dueling with Rookwood and whoever else. And so, I think Rookwood did the blast, and that's what killed Fred.
Okay, so that explains that.
If my memory serves correctly.
I wasn't sure if it was just Percy, like, getting the anger out and just going after any Death Eater he saw, or if that was actually the guy.
Yeah.
So, but for whatever, I mean, either reason to me is very justifiable. And he chases after him.
Well, oh, vengeance.
Yes.
He's an angry Percy. Yay.
Exactly. Chases after him, trying to get him.
It's so relieving to see Percy on the right side of things now.
Yeah. And you know, how sad.
I think that Percy...
Go ahead.
I was going to say that I think that Percy is an important character in the books because he represents people who were just working for the government and became caught up almost in, turns of the administration that they didn't expect or want from the beginning. They were just trying to serve the people, but suddenly they realized they were doing the complete opposite of it and still had the courage to do the right thing and betray the government, which had become like this embodiment of everything they believed in.
Yes.
To help the people.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's a very good point. And I think it's easy to get caught up, you know, and so it almost makes you feel bad for him. Actually, it does. It makes you feel bad for him. And how sad is it that the moment that he comes back to be with his family and to fight with his family against this huge, all-powerful being, you know, he loses his brother. Like, that's... Could you imagine eventually what's going to go through his head? The things like, you know, the times... Not that he was gone for years upon years, but he was gone long enough that he's going to regret that he wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's probably going to feel some amount of guilt for being involved with the rise of Voldemort.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Which ultimately results in Fred's death.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So, Ron and Hermione are hidden behind a tapestry. Ron's trying to obviously follow Percy because it's his brother as well. But Hermione's kind of trying to rein him in and bring him back to where what the real goal is here. And pulls Harry in behind the tapestry and actually tells Harry this time to see where Voldemort is. This is the first time that Hermione...
Do you mean the tapestry?
Yeah.
Letter B.
Okay, sorry.
It's just what did I say?
Tapestry.
Oh. Same thing. Tomato, same tomato.
Same diff. That's right. Carry on. I'm just teasing you.
It's all right. I don't mind. We can put that in one of those bloopers.
Yeah, that's right. I think I will.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, we're behind the tapestry. Hermione tells, for the first time ever, tells Harry to figure out where Voldemort is, basically to go ahead and, like, you know, and this is a pretty significant part as well. Hermione is finally coming to terms with the fact that it's okay that Harry has learned how to, I don't know that he's learned how to decipher what's real and what's not so much as there's that Voldemort is so afraid of that connection that I think Voldemort underestimates Harry and doesn't even think about planting a false vision again.
Yeah, I think there's that. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that, you know, Harry kind of learned how to control it. Like when, what was it? When Dobby died?
Yeah.
That whole scene, you know, with him burying Dobby and stuff, his grief made him, you know, be in control of, you know, his visions. So
that's true. That was a big time where he fight a lot of that. The whole Malfoy Manor. He had to control staying in the situation.
Yes.
So he does go into Voldemort's mind and he sees that he's in the Shrieking Shack, actually. That he has Genie.
Yes.
And
which, can I just bring something up here? Would you guys have preferred that, you know, movie-wise, do you guys prefer that scene was in the Shrieking Shack? Because, like, I mean, a part of me feels like the Shrieking Shack would have been a lot more of a satisfying place for Snape to be killed, like, in a movie. But I didn't mind the boathouse. You know?
Yeah. I thought that it was excellent because it finally answered a question that I had been wondering since I first read the book.
Which is?
Where are the boats kept?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. That's great. Yeah. And I kind of liked it too because, like, okay, this is kind of stupid, but, like, I played the video games when I was a teenager, right?
Yeah.
You know, preteen, you know, the GameCube Harry Potter games.
Yeah.
And I remember
I played those when I was 25. One.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. No, they will never get old. I'll keep playing them until I die. But anyways, and I remember in the fifth video game, which is the first one for the Wii, which I remember thinking this really sucks, But what was cool about it is that you can literally run all around Hogwarts.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So you could actually run down to the boathouse and everything. So it was really cool when Snape actually got killed in the boathouse, because it was like, yeah, I've been there, you know, I've run in that part. It was really awesome.
I played that on the DS, and I used to get so lost, I had to have my sister help.
Yeah, you could easily get lost. But yeah, so I mean, I liked it. I mean, and also, how would they get to the Shrieking Shack in the movie when they when Neville and Seamus destroyed the bridge, right?
Yeah. Yes. So, which was very, very visually satisfying as well. I loved that part.
Yes, it was. Okay. Anyways, back to the Shrieking Shack.
Back to the Shrieking Shack. So yes, Voldemort is there, and he's got this crazy, weird enchantment with Nagini floating. Nagini, I'm saying that right, right?
Okay.
Yes, you are. You go.
So, no, it's actually Nagini.
Nagina.
I knew somebody was going to go there.
I didn't mean that.
It's Nagini. Yeah, just to let you know.
I don't like saying that.
Okay, then don't.
I don't like saying that. We're going to go for Nagini. Okay, so. Anyway, she's floating in this weird little enchanted, I guess, cage, so to speak, I just see her kind of hovering over his head or something. And Harry sees that Lucius Malfoy is there with him, and he's asking about his son, and Voldemort's telling him that, you know, he must be dead because he didn't leave with the rest of the Slytherins. He stayed behind in the castle, which has got to suck for Lucius. But, you know, I really don't feel bad for him at this point. And so Voldemort's telling him to go get Snape, and of course Lucius is saying, let me get the boy for you, let me get Harry Potter for you, and he's telling him, you don't understand, the boy will find me, basically thanks but no thanks, just go get Snape. So
what a confident Voldemort. Like, he's so confident that Harry's gonna find him.
He is, but he knew.
Harry is really good at hide and seek.
He is, yes. Yeah, don't you think that, because Harry's got the cloak, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, but don't you think that Voldemort would be powerful enough to sense Harry's presence in that room, you know?
Well, at this point, he's not in the room, he's just in his mind. They haven't even left the castle yet.
Okay, we haven't even got there yet. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. When we get there, we'll talk about that.
We're almost there, though, because basically there's not much that happens between there and the when they get to the Shrieking Shack. But, so the trio, they obviously decide to go after, you know, some bickering about who's going to go, and then deciding that they're all three going to go to the Shrieking Shack.
Not sure.
Yes, exactly. they all get under the, see, these are the parts that make such awesome vision in my brain. They end up, getting out from behind the tapestry, and they put on the invisibility cloak, and then they see McGonagall coming running down the hall with like a herd of desks and chairs, I guess, in front of her, and she's like little armies of chairs and desks, and she's telling them, attack, attack. Do you imagine what that must
look like? I think that's so funny.
Yeah.
So funny.
So,
It's almost comical.
Yeah. It is, and that's the way I see it.
It's
kinda like Slughorn went and got all of his armchair buddies.
Yeah, right?
I don't know. It kind of takes away, for me, it kind of takes away from the whole seriousness of what's going on, almost.
I think it adds a bit of Hogwarts charm to it.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. But, like, I think she does that on purpose. Yeah.
No?
I think so, too. The same with the whole crystal ball thing, right? So.
Right.
Yeah.
So, as they're running through the halls and everything, this is where the crystal ball comes. As they're running through the halls, they get to the, front entrance.
Yep.
And everybody's fighting, everybody's battling. They see a body, which turns out to be Lavender Brown, falling from one of the upper levels, I think two floors up or something like that. And then it says that Harry sees something animal-like fly past him on four legs kind of thing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Hermione's like, no, stop! And she throws up this jinx or curse at turns out to be Fenrir Greyback.
Yeah.
And then right at that same moment, they hear somebody, I guess that the curse obviously didn't really do a whole lot to Greyback.
Yeah.
So, they hear somebody from above, and I forget, honestly, and I just read this today, too, But I forget honestly what she says, what Trelawney says, but she throws a crystal ball. Or, well, it says, this one it says, I think she dropped this crystal ball and it hit Fenrir Greyback on the head and knocked him out. And then it says that, I think it says that she started throwing them, saying, I've got plenty more. And she started throwing them like with an arm of a tennis player or something like that. So I just see Trelawney like with her big old glasses, a little bit of sherry, you know, winging, just winging some crystal balls at everybody that she sees.
Just to be sure, doesn't it say that she threw the crystal ball at Fenrir and that he moved no more?
Yes, he moved.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he died.
I think so.
I was thought he died.
I just always assumed he was knocked out. I realize that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he died. And that just goes to it's a funny scene, but at the same time you have, you know, death happening. So it's a weird balancing of, you know,
yeah, it's almost a little bit of lighthearted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But the point, he didn't kill Lavender though, did he?
Right, no.
I don't think anyone has ever come to a consensus on whether or not Lavender Brown is alive.
Whether she's dead? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think. But I wouldn't. In this situation, I don't think she is anyway. But I could be.
Yeah.
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 So now the spiders are starting to come in the entryway or whatever. And everybody, of course, is throwing curses at them. And then here comes Hagrid, the, you know, creature lover. And no, don't hurt him, don't hurt him, and runs towards all these spiders. And then Harry sees him get kind of like swallowed up by a crowd of spiders, and you know, as they're running out to the Forbidden Forest, and Harry obviously thinks that Hagrid's going to be killed by all these spiders, goes running after him, and as does Ron and Hermione. And then they start to get closer and closer to the Forbidden Forest, and that, you know, dark coldness that the off is there. It's kind of pushing them away. Ron, Harry, or Hermione really couldn't pull off the whole Patronus thing. They were having a lot of trouble pulling that off. And then all of a sudden they see these three other Patronuses fly past, and I know it was Luna, Ernie,
and awesome.
Oh, and Seamus. Seamus.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, they came running. And what I love is it says that Luna was standing next to Harry almost like she was in DA classes, like encouraging him.
Yeah,
something happy.
And that's what I was just thinking of. Like, I feel those DA classes, they paid off in the end because, you know, stuff
really
like this
did,
happens, right? And they really need it, right? If those DA classes didn't happen, then I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't have been able to cast such strong patrons.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I don't think they would have been able to do it.
Yeah.
So
Dumbledore's army forever. Forever.
Exactly. That's right. So anyway, they obviously go back to fight, and Ron and Hermione and Harry start running towards the Whomping Willow because they know that they need to get into the shack. This is another funny part. So they're running up to the Whomping Willow, and Ron looks at the, you know, it's flailing all around and the buttons all over in the trunk of the tree, and Ron's going, oh, I wish we had Crookshanks. And Hermione looks at him and says, are you a wizard or what?
Hey!
Speaking of something, I totally forgot a part. It's a little part, but it's a funny part. As trio were running out of the castle, they saw Draco getting, having to like plead his case to another Death Eater. No, I'm on your side. I'm on your side. And they're all under the invisibility cloak. And I think Harry stuns the Death Eater or something. But then Ron punches Malfoy in the face from under the cloak, and says, that's the second time I saved your life tonight, you bastard, or something like that. Sort of. I looked it up when I started reading it. Again, it was one of those laugh out loud moments.
You bastard.
he even said that. Oh, he called him like a two-timing bat. I don't know.
Two-timing, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was
that
like,
scene,
you know,
that
you,
two-faced.
That scene that he just...
Two-faced. There you go. Not two-timing.
I'm liking all of these... I'm liking all of these throwbacks. Like, you've got Ron punching him in the face. I like these throwbacks to book three, right?
Yeah.
Where you got, you know, Hermione punches Malfoy in the face.
Hermione
punches
him in the face.
And now they're back at the Whomping Willow.
Yeah.
And that's a throwback in itself, the whole Whomping Willow thing. But, I mean,
that's true.
The whole point where Hermione turns to Ron and says, are you a wizard or not, is really reminiscent of, like, book one.
Yes.
When Hermione
and also they went to the Chamber of Secrets.
And that's right. They went
Ron
to the Chamber
Hermione.
Of Secrets. And like, yes. You know, in book one, when they're dealing with the devil snare, and Hermione says, you know, we don't have any wood to make a fire. Yes. And then Ron looks at her and says, are you a witch or not? You know, yeah. That's just, that's
great. Oh yeah. Now it's the opposite.
I mean, she had only that's known right. for a year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Give her the benefit of the doubt at all.
That's right. But still, I love those parallels that
Ron,
have been put in there.
I love that Ron, even in this situation, he uses Wingardium Leviosa, which again is a throwback.
That's right.
Because remember when that was the whole reason that him and Hermione didn't like each other and then liked each other eventually, you know,
yep.
because of the Wingardium Leviosa, and he wasn't saying it right.
Yeah, I love that.
But that's how he ended up getting the Whomping Willow to stop.
God, this chapter is like the throwback chapter. Like this, like throwback city.
Kind of, it is. Been, yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? I didn't realize it all until you guys pointed some of
that
awesome.
Out.
But so they do make it through the secret passageway, which apparently now is a whole lot smaller as they are bigger. They have grown.
Yeah,
third
that's
book.
Right.
Or the third year. And Harry puts the... This is where you come in, Adam. Harry puts the invisibility cloak back over him.
Yes.
And you know what I was just thinking is, you know, he doesn't actually go into the room. He's just inside the passageway listening to what's happening between Snape and Voldemort.
Yes.
And how Snape has always been able to kind of sense for lack of
time, yeah.
that Harry was around when he was under the invisibility cloak. I don't think that Voldemort honestly did.
No, you didn't.
I don't think he had no clue. He was too caught up in his own, own agenda, you know?
Yeah, I think that's awesome, actually. Snape is, you know, kind of the superior wizard here, in a way.
Yeah, when you look at the two of them, right, and you think of the legilimens, oculum, yeah, kind of
yep.
word. It does seem that Snape is still the more powerful when it comes to at least those two things.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this part is kind of sad.
Kind of.
Which, who thought that this would make me sad, really, honestly, until we get into your chapter, Adam? I didn't know. But so, Voldemort is explaining to Snape at this point that, you know, he's sorry he has to do what he has to do, but, you know, and that Snape has been a loyal servant, and basically he appreciates that, but the Elder Wand is not doing for Voldemort what he wanted it to do. You know, and Snape's telling him, oh, it's done great magic for you, and he says, oh, no. And it truly cannot be my wand until, because Voldemort doesn't understand. So he says, you know, it's not going to be my wand until I kill the person who, basically because Voldemort thinks that because Snape killed Dumbledore.
That he owns the wand,
That he owns, yeah, the wand's allegiance is Snape's. So Voldemort thinks he's got to kill Snape in order for Voldemort to have the wand's allegiance.
Yes, that's right.
And so this is where it says that Voldemort did a flick of his wand, and for a moment, I guess Snape thought that he wasn't going to get hurt because it didn't seem anything was happening.
Yeah.
And then he realized that Nagini was coming down upon him, basically, and was going to bite him, which is...
Yep.
Crazy part is, Voldemort never waited. Voldemort never waited to see if Snape was going to die, which, I mean... He knew Snape was going to die, but...
But, like, he didn't actually watch him die, which shows, like...
Yeah.
Like, he didn't care, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I mean...
I don't... Yeah, that's what I think.
Like, he even killed Snape. First of all, I find it cruel that he didn't just simply Avada Kedavra Snape. He had to kill Snape with the freaking snake.
With
and
the
give him
snake.
The slow
yeah,
and
right.
painful death, right? Which he does not deserve. That's how much...
To your most
that's how
loyal
much Voldemort
servant.
Doesn't care. And then on top of that... He leaves as the snake is basically killing him, right? He doesn't even stay to witness Snape's death.
Yeah.
That's how much he doesn't
right.
give
yeah.
a crap about, you know, any of this, right?
Yeah.
About Snape or anything. Mm-hmm. That's how much he's willing to, that's as far as, you know, it shows the extent of that he'll go in killing somebody,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, well.
To have the ultimate power,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry,
of course,
Joe,
for plot reasons, we need, you know, for Snape to be alive for a little bit longer, so probably that's why he had,
yeah.
you know, the snake kill him. But you could say that,
yeah.
you know, Avada Kedavra is the curse that, you know, Snape uses on everybody, so muggles, wizards, whatever. Maybe you could try to argue that, you know, Nagini killing Snape was, you know, special in some way, maybe it showed that, you know, he knew that killing Snape wasn't killing like everybody else, you know.
Yeah. Maybe. Oh, so he's going to make his
death. I'm with Gio on this. I think so, it would have seemed like an honor to use his beloved snake to kill Snape.
So he says, you're going to die, but you're going to die, you know, more painfully as my respect to you. That's so stupid.
Yeah. That's
so, like, ridiculous and dumb.
But I could see how that could work. I never really thought of that before, but I could see how that...
See how the twisted part of Voldemort could come out
right,
like that?
Yeah. Right, and it makes him that much more twisted.
Psycho. Oh. He's a psychopath. Voldemort is a psychopath.
Yeah,
like
he really
is. Like his gift to Snape. I only think it's strange that, you know, he never considered that maybe after he did that, Nagini would be, you know, the owner of the Elder One, and he would have to kill her as well, but... Anyways.
Yeah, right.
Nagini doesn't have hands. Oh, yeah. Why didn't they think of that?
Nice.
All right. So now Voldemort has... Sorry. Hold on. Okay. Sorry. Take that. Okay. So anyway, Snape is dead and Voldemort is... Or is not dead yet. I'm sorry. And Voldemort has left the room and Harry... I don't think he was even thinking, but he moved some kind of crate or something so he could see what was happening, and then decided to, for I don't even think Harry knew why he was doing it, but he walked up to Snape without the invisibility cloak so that Snape could see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed this white silvery stuff coming out of, which is, this is kind of crazy, his mouth, his nose, and his head.
That's weird. I think it was like it was coming out of his pores or something like that. I forget.
It's almost as if...
He's sweating it out, sort of.
Or like when you see a movie and it shows somebody dying, how they gurgle the blood. And I'm sorry, I know that's gross, but they gurgle the blood or what have you. But so it's almost like he was gurgling this memory, you know?
Mm-hmm. Which I find
What I wonder is, what if Harry wasn't there? Would that memory still have been coming out? Or did it start coming out because he knew Harry was there?
I think that's because he knew he was there, I think.
I think he sensed Harry was there, and he did that. Yeah, exactly. So, and also, like, aside from that, I think it's kind of gross how the book depicts the
it really does. Yeah.
It's so much more, has so much more meaning for me, you know, and so much more, you know, attributes to the tragic story if he, like, cries it out like he did in the movie, you know? I just find it a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like that movie decision was much better than what. Plus, I found it very hard to picture in my head, like, the memories coming out of his nose and mouth and ears and all that kind of stuff. Like, it was just kind of weird for me. But anyways,
I don't find it hard to picture, but I don't know how it could have been done in a movie.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
So I wasn't disappointed with that part.
Okay. Well.
So anyway, Harry. Hermione gives Harry a bottle or whatever to put the memory in, and he does. And as Snape is taking his last breath, he tells Harry, take it, of course, take the memory. And as he's taking his last breaths, he tells Harry to look at him.
Oh, no.
And that's how the chapter ends, but I just want to point out that for those who haven't already come to this conclusion, I personally feel that the reason Harry to look at him was because Harry has Lily's eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And the last thing Snape wanted to see was, before he died, was
Lily died. That's it. Yeah, he did. Yeah, because I think in a way, Lily kind of ran Snape's life, you know, like his whole
life. He did.
Life,
it was an obsession.
It was an obsession.
Yeah.
And he was in love with her, right? Like
he was deeply, obsessed with her.
Deeply, it was like, he was obsessed with her, but it was because he was in love with her, right? And so, you know, I feel like, you know, he wants to look into Harry's eyes because they're Lily's eyes, essentially, right? And, and it's very fitting and tragic. Holy crap.
Yeah.
So, and then he dies. So we've have...
Yep, he dies.
Has anybody noticed that, like, all these chapters end with people dying? Like, we've got Fred, like, you know, at the very last sentence of the chapter is, like, his lifeless face, and now we've got Snape, who's, like, his lifeless face.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's funny. No, it's not funny. It's terrible, but, you know, it's, So, okay, can I take her away then?
Yeah, take her away, Adam.
Chapter 33 The Prince's Tale.
Okay, so I have got, okay, we've now come to chapter 33, which is entitled The Prince's Tale, and I will say that in my opinion, this chapter is the most depressing chapter of the entire series, as well as being the most revealing plot-wise, the most conclusive, right? It kind of clears up all of the questions that we've been having, well, most of the questions that we've been having, right? Chio's chapter is going to, you know, clear up some more as well.
Yes.
Like this chapter is huge and it depressed people. And this is like,
and it's,
this is my favorite chapter.
And it's very, very long. You feel like you're reading a book about Snape all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a novella in itself,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to summarize
If I may say,
yes,
just, you can skip this chapter and just listen to Lauren Fairweather's Prince's Tale EP. It pretty much is just as well, and it's much easier and much faster.
Okay. So, yeah, you guys can go do that now. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go through the chapter.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'm going to do it very concisely. Or I'm going to try and do it very concisely. But there's also some really good discussion topics in here. So, basically, after Snape dies and Harry's collected the memories, Voldemort's voice kind of penetrates all over them once more. And he says, give me Potter in 1 hour. You have 1 hour to give me Potter or I'm going to start killing all of you, right? There will be no mercy. You're all going to be dead, basically. And so this kind of puts everything into motion here. And Harry says, okay, well, we got to, you know, I got to see this memory. I've got an hour, right? I would be so nervous at this point because who knows how long this memory is going to be, right? Like, I feel,
yeah.
Like time doesn't stop when you go into the pensieve, right?
No.
Like it continues.
Right.
So I'd be like, oh gosh, would I have an hour to watch this? But anyways, they run back to the castle and, they return to the Great Hall. And this is a really sad scene because, you know, it's, everyone's kind of taking a break and, there's a lot of the deceased lying around, and Harry sees Lupin and Tonks among the dead bodies, and he has, you know, a little, like, it's, you know, he's on a mission, right? Like, he has to go find out what's in this memory, so, you know, he consciously thinks to himself, I can't look at these people right now, and he can't bear to see all of the dead people, so it's really sad, and very contrasting with, you know, the charm of Hogwarts and, you know, using the, you know, crystal balls and the chairs and, you know, people are dead, right?
Yeah. Yep. Now you see all, yeah.
I find it like this is very World War, you know, like trenches and, you know, carrying the deceased back to your base and, you know, stuff like that, right? So they go to Dumbledore's office where the pensieve is and Harry puts in the memory and he goes inside. And thus begins a series of, scenes that Harry sees, with the first one being, and I'm just going to quickly go and look at the questions that I have here. And I want to say one thing. J.K. Rowling has a kind of what I've read as a setup and payoff writing style. So she set us up the entire series with Snape, right, being this antagonistic, mean towards Harry for no reason, sets it all up. He's a bad, and then as we get into the later books, he's a bad guy. He's with Voldemort, and where does his allegiances truly lie? To now, this is the payoff chapter, right? Where everything was, you know, not the way we were originally thinking it was, right?
Yes.
So that's really good for Joe. Really good. Thus begins the scenes. Lily and Petunia are in a playground, and Lily is showing Petunia some strange tricks that she can do, and Snape, a very young Snape, pops out, and he tells her that, you know, you're a witch, and Lily becomes very... You witch! No. Lily becomes very offended, because she doesn't understand what this is, right? And so her and Petunia kind of prance off very indignantly, and Snape is left very confused and upset because that's not really the desired effect that he wanted when he, you know, came out of the bushes and told her she was a witch. So, you know, we see a little crush developing, I guess. And then the scene switches, and Snape and Lily are together, and they're talking about Hogwarts, and Snape is giving her stuff on who the Dementors are and Azkaban and all that kind of stuff. And we get a little glimpse of Snape's home life, which is interesting, because we don't really know much. We know that his mother is Eileen Prince, right? But he says to Lily, my parents are still fighting. So this kind of shows us that his home life isn't happy, right? And that's probably contributes to his character and, you know, cause you know, like we said last chapter, people who don't have a great home life end up, you know, not being, end up being bullies, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, not everybody, but lots of them. So, so then Petunia turns up and she insults Snape and then a tree. Okay. I kind of laughed when I read this. I probably shouldn't have, but the tree branch then falls on Petunia. and Lily blames Snape on it. 'Cause she's like, you got angry and you made the tree branch fall on her. And so then they both leave indignantly once more. And then we're in and this scene is really, okay, we get into some of Petunia's character, right? And this is kind of the revealing scene about Aunt Petunia that we've all kind of been waiting for. And so they're all at platform 9 3/4. And we learn that, and we get to see the families there. And we learn about the letter that Petunia writes to Dumbledore.
Yes.
Asking for admission to Hogwarts. And this was a secret letter. She didn't tell Lily or Snape that this happened, right?
Yeah.
And then, so they got a hold of it and they read it and Lily kind of calls her out on it. And Petunia this is like the ultimate humiliation, right? This reveals her jealousy and her longing to be a part of what her sister has and just everything to do with that. Right. And it's, it really digs into the roots of why Aunt Petunia is the way she is throughout this entire series.
That was a big surprise to me. Yeah. I did not see that coming. Really? Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I always thought, Petunia was so, it was such a character that, she was like rock, she had her beliefs. She was against magic and stuff like that. And it was just so simple and so, how can I say this? Shallow. And yes. I was not expecting her to be any more than that, So yeah, that came.
You weren't expecting her to have an actual depth to her character, an actual backstory to why she is the way she is.
Yes,
I agree with that for sure.
Really, I never did. I always thought that there was something more to Petunia with like what she was about to say to Harry at the beginning of this book, and remember my last.
No, because
Petunia,
it's
that howler that Dumbledore sent.
Petunia and Harry's, and Uncle Vernon, like they're the same. They're a couple, and they stand for this. And Uncle Vernon, we never get to know why he's like that. And
yeah, well, he's a static character, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like,
he doesn't have.
He's just been He's just been
brought
up in a world that only
it's kind of expecting
normalcy, and anything outside of that is automatic.
It's kind of expecting that maybe Petunia would be the same, but it makes sense, and probably it was Petunia that made Vernon so much against magic. Possibly.
I think so. Yeah. I think that I see it as they kind of like fed off of each other, right? Like he was the one that condoned normalcy and she fell right into that because she was, wanted to get away from her past. And she was the one that was amplifying how bad the witches and wizards were. So he, got fed off that, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So they kind of had a very codependent relationship. So, yeah. And also I just wanted to draw a really little interesting connection here in Order of the Phoenix at the beginning with the letter, right? Dumbledore's letter at the beginning there, where he's talking to Petunia and he says, "Remember my last." Petunia mutters in that scene, she says, she knew, because we find out that she knows who the Dementors are, right? And she actually says in book 5, like 2 books previous, she says, "I heard that awful boy telling her long ago," right? Years ago, right? And we now know that this is the scene where she walks in and the tree branch falls on her after she had been listening to Snape tell Lily what the Dementors are, right? And I think that is so cool that we can draw that connection.
Because at first you just assume that it was James, right?
That's right, and that's what I was going to say. At first we assume it's James that was telling her, but like there's this whole other story happening, which is awesome.
There's another wizard boy.
There's another wizard boy.
Yeah.
That's right. In this soap opera of the Wizarding World.
Can I just add that I draw true inspiration from Aunt Petunia, and writing a letter begging to please be let into a school is how I'm going to get my law degree.
Amen, awesome. Right?
Amen to that. Oh, that's awesome. Cool. So anyways, moving along, the next quick scene is just them on the train, and we get to meet James for the first time and get a sense of kind of what a bully he is. And we get to meet Sirius, and they're all kind of having a big fight over which is better, Slytherin or Gryffindor. Then the next scene is the Sorting Hat ceremony, and Snape is all dismayed because he's put into Slytherin while everyone else is put into Gryffindor, so there's that separation between him and Lily there. And also I find it interesting that Lucius Malfoy is a prefect for Slytherin, which is kind of very fitting, in my opinion.
Yeah, he has that strong quality of leadership. I think people flock to him.
Yep, that's right. The next scene is, we're now seeing this divide between Lily and Snape, and Snape is, you know, in love with Lily. And I don't know if we can call it love just yet. I think
it's obsession.
It's obsession. I think it's not obsession, though. He's got feelings. When you say obsession, you make it sound like he's, you know, like...
No, I think that it started as love, but then at this point, they have so little in common that he doesn't know her at all, that it's just turned into an obsession.
Yeah, but I feel Okay, yeah. I guess I see what you mean, right? It's a desire. I don't want to call it an obsession. I feel like it's... You know,
well, he's clearly obsessed with her based on the Patronuses.
I get that, but like, I feel like it's just something deeper than obsession. You know, I don't know. Like he's in love with her and he desires her.
May have been at once, but now I think it just morphed into.
I don't believe that. I am going to argue totally against that. I think that Snape is. He has the feeling. That's who Snape is. He's got feelings, and you know he hides them away. And I think that he loved Lily so deeply. That he then became obsessed with her. I don't think it was simply an obsession with her. I think that's what J.K. Rowling is trying to portray, or is trying to bring out in this story, is that he loved her. He didn't just have this obsession with her. So I'm going to argue against that.
I do agree. I think he's an unhealthy, you know, person.
Yeah.
Like he's not, I guess he's insecure. He has, you know, the wrong idea, or at least he used to have the wrong ideas, but he did love Lily, and he couldn't get her. And you know, if this was only about obsession, I think it would have died out after, you know, Lily's death.
Yeah,
but it didn't.
And when you and when you say that it's solely obsession, it implies that, you know, he had no feelings, and that's.
I never said that he didn't have no feelings, because obsession is a feeling. I'm saying that it started out as love when they actually had things in common and they knew each other, but then after they had both changed so much that Snape just was obsessed with her because he expected that love that he was no longer feeling for a person that didn't exist anymore.
No, but I argue that he was still feeling that love.
Okay.
Yes. So, and I think that's what J.K. Rowling is trying to say here. That's what this whole story is about, right? And I'm going to get to that later on. It's proven here later on in the chapter. So anyways, moving along, Lily and Snape have this fight, and Lily hates who Snape is hanging out with and how they all have Death Eater ambitions, and Snape feels that James is an arrogant toe rag, blah, blah, blah. So there's that divide there. And then moving along, the next scene is from... book 5. Oh, it's the same scene that Harry sees in the Pensieve in book 5, Snape's worst memory, right? Only at the end of the scene, Snape calls Lily a mudblood, which is what we don't see in book 5. And so then we now realize that this scene is Snape's worst memory, not because he was bullied by James, but because he called Lily a mudblood, and that kind of definitely ended Lily's friendship with Severus, right? And henceforth, she then married James and had Harry, which is the product that Snape could never have, right? So
yeah, and it, you know, you can just picture how afraid he must have been back in book 5, because he just got to Harry just before, you know, he could see maybe more like his regret and stuff like that. So Harry got very close to seeing who Snape really was.
Yes. So. Yeah, I agree with that. So as we're moving through this chapter, I really like how we're going through time again. And in a sense, we're kind of revisiting the whole series, you know, because there's going to be points now where Snape is talking with Dumbledore and we're going back to book 1 and book 4 and book 6 and, you know, all this kind of stuff that was happening behind the scenes, which we never got to see. So it's kind of cool. So in Gryffindor, so now we're at the scene with Gryffindor Tower, and Snape is talking with Lily at the Gryffindor entrance, and he's telling her, "I'm so sorry, I called you a mudblood," and he's remorseful, and he feels absolutely terrible, and she doesn't forgive him, and this is kind of like the end of their friendship, I guess, or, you know, she doesn't want to have anything to do with him anymore, and this is really sad for Snape, because he loves her, so... So then we zoom through time, and adult Snape is with Dumbledore on a hilltop, and I love this scene because Dumbledore is very harsh and angry towards Snape, and it's very obvious to us, and he makes it clear through his words that he does not trust Snape, and through the whole series, Harry is wondering, why the hell does Dumbledore trust Snape so much when Snape is, you know, this, you know, dumbass, for lack of a, you know, like, an, you know, really mean guy, right? He has no grounds to trust Snape on. And us as readers question it as well. And it's clear here in the scene that Dumbledore does not trust Snape. And Snape says that he relayed everything he heard from the prophecy to Voldemort. And now Voldemort thinks that his opponent is Lily's son. And I just keep thinking, like, why would he, like, did he know that Lily was going to have a son? And, you know, why, after hearing the prophecy, would he even go to Voldemort and relay that? Because he knows that Voldemort murders people, right? And he knew that he would be putting Lily and her family in danger if he told Voldemort. So that's something that I don't really...
I don't know. I almost think that maybe he thought that he would just go kill the kid. And I don't think at that point...
That's definitely what he expected. He wasn't. He didn't care about the kid.
Because it was James's kid. Yeah. And he didn't care. And I don't think it was until this point when it was really pointed out that Harry was Lily's child too, and what Lily did to protect Harry. I don't think that ever occurred to Snape before now.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. I'll agree with that. And then Dumbledore is disgusted that Snape. Has even asked Voldemort to spare Lily's life without any regard for Harry and James. So, yeah, that's, you know, we're establishing, like, this disgust that Dumbledore has. And Snape then asked Dumbledore, just, you know, hide the family, you know, hide them. And Dumbledore says, well, what will you have, like, what will you do in return for me? And Snape replies, anything. And then the scene changes, very dramatic. Now we're in Dumbledore's office, and Snape is very grief-stricken, and he's crying, and he loved Lily, and she's dead, and the son is still alive, and Dumbledore says, if you loved Lily, then you will agree to protect her son, and Snape is very reluctant, but he agrees. The next scene is Snape complaining to Dumbledore about Harry, saying that, you know, he's just like his father, and he's arrogant, and he's, you know, a little brat, And Dumbledore says, actually, I've heard from all the other students that he's, you know, a very modest and kind and relatively talented young wizard.
Oh, that's really nice to hear.
Exactly.
Just really quickly, so nice. Snape didn't know that, you know, it was Lily's son until after he told Voldemort, right?
Yeah, he had no idea what the prophecy meant. Voldemort was the one who assumed what it was, I think.
But I see. But
so he was perfectly fine with turning in the family of some person that he didn't know. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just to make that completely clear.
And after he found out, he went to Dumbledore.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just thought that maybe Snape would be able to correlate, you know, Lily having her son with the prophecy and realize that, you know, it could be Lily's son, right? I don't know. Maybe he wasn't thinking. I don't know. But anyways, and then Dumbledore says, I need you to keep an eye on Quirrell for me because I'm very suspicious of him. So we got a throwback to book one with Quirrell, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So now the next scene is Yule Ball, book four. Dumbledore and Snape are talking at
the
entrance.
They go together.
Yeah, they go together to the Yule Ball. This is after they finish their little dance on the floor there. Dumbledore and Snape are talking, and Snape tells Dumbledore that Karkaroff plans to flee if he feels his mark burn, right? Because the Dark Lord is about to return again. And Dumbledore says, Snape, do you plan on fleeing as well? And Snape says, no, I'm not a coward. And Dumbledore then thinks, you know, he says out loud, you know, I wonder if we sort the students at, you know, at too young of an age. And this shocks Snape, and it really makes us think, like, yes, I personally believe that they sort the students way too young because you're 11 and you don't know what kind of person you are. You're still a child and you're still developing and you don't know who you are as a person really when you're 11 years old, right?
I completely agree with that.
And I think that when they predetermine where they go, it does not help in any way to shape one's individual identity because you're already put in Slytherin, right?
Where
you're
exactly. already assumed. It sets them on a track where they're assumed to be these types of people.
That's right.
And so exactly. that shapes who they become.
Yes. And I think that it's so, in that sense, I think that Hogwarts is rather cruel and very thoughtless in a sense.
It basically just pits like the students against each other. It divides them into these four groups and then.
Exactly.
They're like told to go against each other and compete. Like, I'm not saying that competition is a bad thing. God, I love competition, but like just drawing these very clear, strict lines between 11-year-olds, I think can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, exactly. It's very dangerous. And I think that maybe if Snape was given a chance to, you know, grow up and figure out who he was, then he might have been put in a different house, maybe, mm-hmm. right? Moving along, the next scene is from book 6, and Dumbledore is semi-conscious and his hand is all blackened and withered, and Snape is kind of muttering incantations and giving Snape a potion, and he tells Dumbledore that he has about a year to live because he can't get rid of the curse, he can only contain it, right? And we see the ring, which is cracked, and we see Gryffindor's sword, so he obviously... And Dumbledore says he tried the ring on, and he was stupid because he tried it on and he shouldn't have, right? Which was kind of silly of Dumbledore, but I see it almost as like the Lord of the Rings, where he was kind of enamored by it, right? And it kind of like begged to be put on, like through the spell that maybe Voldemort put on it, right? To kind of, because you know, he sets up enchantments and things to kind of destroy the person who's, you know, trying to get at his Horcruxes, obviously, right?
Oh, yo, can I just mention that earlier today?
Yo.
One of... That was weird. Anyway, can I just mention that earlier today, one of my friends referred to Gandalf as Gandorf?
Oh, that's great.
Oh, no.
Isn't that like from The Legend of Zelda or something?
I have no idea.
Ganondorf is the bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah, Ganondorf.
That's right.
Not Gandorf.
So, I think this is really interesting because Snape says to Dumbledore, you only have about a year to live. And Dumbledore is very calm and he says, well, this makes my decision on what to do very, you know, it makes it easier, right? It makes it a lot less complicated. And I just admired the guy so much because he's so humble, even in the face of his own death, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and he's ready to die almost, you know? And I think it's really great. And he keeps his cool and is just very humble. Right? To the day he dies.
Yeah.
And they get into a conversation of Draco trying to kill Dumbledore, and Dumbledore's very aware of what Draco's intentions are, and he makes Snape promise to kill Dumbledore. So this is kind of the aha moment, right? Where, you know, Snape and Dumbledore reach a prearranged agreement to kill Dumbledore because Dumbledore wants to die not at the hands of the enemy, and also he knows that when Draco fails, because he knows that Draco will, Voldemort will want Snape to kill Dumbledore in the end, and it also establishes this trust between Snape and Voldemort, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, perfect. Yes. Oh, sorry, did I say Dumbledore will want him to kill? Yeah, okay. I meant Voldemort will want Snape to kill Dumbledore in the end, after Draco fails. So we move to the next scene, and Snape and Dumbledore are walking on the school grounds, and Snape is really pissed off because he wants to know what Dumbledore and Harry have been up to, like during those lessons and what kind of information Dumbledore is giving Harry. And Dumbledore says, come to my office tonight and I'll tell you. And so we're now in Dumbledore's office. And this is kind of a huge deal, this scene. Dumbledore tells Snape that if there's ever a time when Voldemort keeps Nagini in sight at all times and, you know, within magical protection, Snape must tell Harry that he is a Horcrux and must die to kill Voldemort in the end. Mm-hmm. And this is like, I think this is probably the biggest revelation of the entire series. It is, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I would agree. It's just that, you know, I feel like we've got that revelation. You're going to talk about Snape, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got that from, you know, early on. So I don't think it was an aha moment for me, because this entire chapter has been a huge haha moment for me.
Haha moment.
So, aha.
Yeah.
And, you know, but yeah, but it just makes sense. You know, it just closes everything really, really nicely.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I did suspect this was happening, but it was an aha moment for me to actually see it in the print and actually have it legitimately there. You know, like, this is actually what's happening. Like, I suspected it and it wasn't a huge surprise, but it was very satisfying and very, just very satisfying to see it actually there. So, So Harry must die to kill Voldemort. And this is the biggest revealing of the series, in my opinion. Cause now Harry knows what he has to do. Right. And Snape is very pissed off, and he feels that Dumbledore has risen the boy as, you know, a pig for slaughter, right? You've risen the boy just to kill him off in the end. You've made me protect this boy just so you can kill him, and it's unfair, and I can't believe you did that to me. And Dumbledore turns to them and says, well, don't tell me you've actually grown to care for the boy. And Snape kind of, it's very, just like the movie, Snape, like, shows his Patronus, which is a doe, which is what Lily's Patronus was. And it's just, it's almost like a silent conversation between Dumbledore and Snape. And Dumbledore says, really, after all this time? And Snape says, always. And that is the proof. That is the proof that Snape is in love with Lily, because his own freaking Patronus became Lily. He has those deep feelings. There's no way you can call this just simply an obsession, right? Like,
I can.
So you can, but I don't believe it's right, right?
And okay.
Yeah. And so, like, this, to me, is the proof that Snape loved Lily.
I think that this is the proof that it was an obsession, because James loved Lily, because his Patronus clearly matched hers, the stag and the doe, whereas Snape was just mirroring her and trying to just...
No.
Yes.
No, I totally disagree with that.
Okay, completely. I disagree with you.
I will confront you, Heather. I will confront you.
Go ahead.
I'll win. I will finally confront you. No, you won't, because I know that there's a crap load of listeners who agree that this is a freaking love story and not a story.
This is not a love story. This is not what a love story is.
This is a tragic love story.
It's not even that.
So don't even say.
It's just gross.
It's, you know what? It might be. It might be gross to you, but for me, it's a tragic love story. And it actually makes me, and it makes listeners, you know, respect Snape in the end. Like, and even Harry freaking names his kid after Snape in the end.
Yeah, so that was messed up.
Okay. All right. You know what? I am not getting into this discussion with you.
Because, you know, it is, I do think that Snape loves Lily, but I do think that it's really messed up and unhealthy. You know, he just cannot bring himself to tell
her that. Well, of course it's messed up and unhealthy. Yes, I agree with that, but I don't agree.
And I do think that, you know, there is some degree of obsession, but I do think that, you know, after Lily died, if there had not been love there as well, you know, Snape would not have cared to protect Harry the way he did. You know, he would not have put his own life in so much danger just to protect, you know, Harry.
So Snape then talks to Dumbledore's portrait in the next scene, and Snape is to give. Sorry, what did I write here? Oh yeah. Snape is to give Voldemort the correct date of departure to keep Voldemort's trust, right? So this is what the portrait of Dumbledore, which I think is really cool, because Snape now has this portrait that he can talk to Dumbledore through. So it's not like Dumbledore is completely gone in a sense, right?
No, he's like totally still guiding him to everything.
Yeah, he's there, which is awesome. I love it. He has to give the correct date of departure to keep maintaining that trust. And he's also supposed to suggest decoys to keep Harry safe on that date, right? The next scene is Snape confronting Mundungus, so that he suggests decoys, right? So that it's not Snape directly. And we are coming to the end here. The next scene shows Snape on a broom the night of departure, where they're having, you know, the Seven Potters battle. And he casts a spell at a Death Eater to, you know, make sure that the Death Eater doesn't hurt anybody, but the spell misses, and that hit George's ear.
That's so it was
Snape
that
hit. That's how that happened. Yeah, which is a real shame. Yeah. So, two more scenes. Sirius, and this is freaking heartbreaking. Sirius is in the room at Grimmauld Place, and he's weeping as he reads the letter that Lily wrote to Sirius.
Wait, you mean Snape is in the room?
Snape. Snape is in the room at Grimmauld Place, and he's bawling his eyes out as he's reading this letter that Lily wrote to Sirius about. I think, if I remember correctly, the letter was like, oh, it was like a Christmas letter or something. When Harry was a little boy, and they're, you know, giving like the update on how their life was doing. You know how like everybody writes down a yearly update of how their life is with, you know, what all their kids are up to.
And he got his presents and stuff.
Yeah, yes, right. and then he tears out her signature, and he also tears out the picture of her in that picture, and he leaves the room. And the final scene is Snape talking to Phineas Nigellus in the portrait. Phineas Nigellus is relaying to Snape that Harry and Hermione are in the Forest of Dean, because he kind of overheard, while his portrait's in the bag there where they are. And Dumbledore's portrait then comes in, and he suggests that Snape plant the sword without being seen. So Snape then says, I have a plan, and he removes the sword of Gryffindor, and he leaves the room. And before we end the chapter, I just wanted to bring up just one more point. I wanted to do a comparison with Petunia and Snape, and I wanted to say that they both share very similar characteristics in their personalities and their situations, because both were denied what they wanted, right? Petunia wanted to go to Hogwarts, and Snape wanted Lily, right?
Except the difference is that Lily is not a prize to be won and is a human being, whereas Hogwarts is a castle.
Okay.
So that's pretty different.
Okay.
It is.
Yes. And then the second one is both manifested jealousy and disappointment that kind of was projected through their hatred towards Harry. So they kind of used Harry as like their object of jealousy and hatred in a way. You know? So I find that kind of interesting, just to kind of do a character parallel there. There we have it. There's so, the princess. Does anybody have any final thoughts before we move on?
I was just going to ask you guys if by the time you reached, Lily's letter in this chapter, did you guys go all the way back to reread the beginning of the letter? Because we get the ending right now. So I think the first half that we read finished with something. It seems incredible that Dumbledore, and then it just, you couldn't read any longer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it stopped. Yeah. So right now we can read the end of the letter, which I think is something like was friends with Grindelwald or something like that. And then she finishes it with love and Lily.
Chapter 34. The Forest Again.
Okay, so chapter 34, Harry goes for a walk and dies.
There you go.
Like, that's, I'm not even exaggerating, really. That's mostly what it is. Like, it's all about his internal monologue of his struggle to make it down to the forest where he will die. I mean, it's true, though, and, like, I don't want to, it's arguably one of the most beautifully written chapters J.K. Rowling has ever created. So I think I just want to suggest that everybody go back and read it right now, because it's pretty short and it's very emotional and very powerful.
Yeah, but also, didn't J.K. Rowling said in her interview that she was crying her eyes out as she wrote this chapter.
I can only imagine.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all his realization that Harry is just like a little piece in this giant plan that Dumbledore has created, and like he's pretty fine with that, because I think that deep down he always suspected that there was something larger that he had to go and do. Yeah, and now he knows it, and probably like a small sense of calm has come to that he no longer, the decision has been made for him.
Yeah.
And so he goes down, he walks down to the forest, and along the way he just sees all of these people that he knew. There's Colin Creevy, dead, being carried by Oliver Wood and Neville.
That was also a shocker for me.
Yeah.
Colin Creevy.
Colin was underage, and he snuck back in the castle to fight with them, because Colin has always been Harry's biggest supporter.
Yep, so that was very sad because he's just 16, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I would say that he was obsessed with Harry, you know?
No, he's not obsessed. I'm just kidding. Okay. He's actually a friend of Harry's and supports him wholeheartedly.
Yeah, so, you're right.
There's that difference there. He actually enjoys Harry's company and doesn't treat him like, no. like a rat. So.
Okay, yeah.
So, but he can't see anything in the Great Hall, so he just keeps walking. And then he meets Neville, and he decides, you know what, I'm going to tell Neville that, like, I haven't killed Nagini yet, and I'm going to tell Neville, because just like Dumbledore, he told three people, and now I'm telling Neville so that it's Hermione, Ron, and Neville left that know that they have to kill a snake, just in case. But as Harry's walking away, Neville just tells him, we're all going to keep fighting, Harry, you know that. Neville's so cool.
I agree.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's cool.
He's a BA.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite characters.
Ever. Oh, yeah, by far.
I think he's just... Because I think that he's just so purely good.
I know.
And a lot of times people don't like those characters and they think, oh, they're so girlish because they're so boring. He's just like, oh, goody-two-shoes. But I think it's incredible to find that because it's so rare to find that in a person.
But what's cool about Neville is, yeah, he's purely good, but, like, he's got, like, a progression in his life. Like, he's got a story, right? He's not just always been, like, he is purely good, but, like, he was the one that was bullied and the one that, like, really found himself in the end and had the courage to stand up for all that he believed in. And
exactly, and all through that time of being ostracized as a child and, you know, never quite achieving what he wants, he still remains for the good.
Yeah, and I think Holly really pinpointed it there. She said, you know, anybody who's ever been bullied must love Neville.
Yep.
Because he's like the symbol of, you know, how good people can really be, no matter what they go through.
And he also passes by Ginny, and she's comforting a girl who says that she doesn't want to go home anymore, or that she doesn't want to fight anymore, and that she just wants to go home. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you can really say about it.
Yeah, that's sad.
And he walks past Hagrid's hut, and he remembers all the times he had there, and then he realizes that he still has the snitch, and then he thinks, oh, I open at the close. That's what it means. Like, I'll open when I realize that I know I'm about to die.
That's what the close is, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. So the snitch opens, and he takes out the resurrection stone. He was right. It was in there all along. And he turns it over, and the four people that should have been his, you know, parental figures throughout his whole life, his father, his mother and father, and then Sirius and Remus as well. And they all look young and happy and not like life has been wearing on them for years and years.
Yeah.
And they walk with him through the forest, supporting him, and they act as Patronuses when he comes to the Mentors.
My gosh.
That's just nice to see them, I guess.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice I just want to highlight here that this is kind of the last time we see them, you know?
Yeah. And I am really glad that Lupin gets his last words. He says, like, after Harry says that he's sorry that he had to die before his son, and he says, I am sorry too. Sorry I will never know him, but he will know why I died, and I hope he will understand. I was trying to make a world in which he could live a happier life.
Aww.
That gave me chills again, just hearing you say it.
Remus.
Me too. Yeah, I got these chills. No wonder J.K. Rowling was crying as she wrote this. Holy crap. Yeah. And I mean, just the whole part, the whole, you know, stuff about, you know, Harry talking to his parents again, and they're telling them how proud he is, or how proud they are of him, and and doesn't he ask Sirius if it hurts to die at one point?
Yeah, he does.
And Sirius says it's quicker than falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Just, I love it. Love all of this. And then he dies.
Yeah, pretty much. then they come across two Death Eaters in the woods, Yaxley and Dolohov, and, They're like, okay, well, Potter's not coming. Okay, let's leave. So Harry follows them back into what is actually Aragog's former lair. And there Hagrid is. And he has been captured and is being tied up.
I hate this. I hate this so much.
I know, I know.
Oh, man.
And Harry pulls off his cloak and shows that he's there. And Hagrid is completely distraught. Of course, which is terrible that Hagrid had to see this.
No kidding.
And then,
oh my gosh, you're right. Like this whole, you know, Harry dying and right in front of Hagrid, and oh my gosh. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
And then Voldemort kills him.
The resurrection stone drops from his fingers,
and he sees Voldemort raise his wand, and then nothing.
Ah!
The end.
The end. The end of the series. This is it. Yep.
Yep.
Just to let you guys know, this is actually our final
Scar.
Episode.
Scar. Right.
Oh, yeah. Scar. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So Harry's dead. Harry dead. He gone to the afterlife. But I love it. I love that, like, you know, it was... there was speculation when this book came out, and I remember even thinking myself, I think Harry's gonna die, right? And some people were like, oh my gosh, I can't, if he dies, like, I will kill myself, and, you know, like, oh, like, I don't know what I would do if Harry.
I do hope that, you know, these people
right
all the way to the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, really and, but, you know, like, I don't want Harry to die, and some people were really seriously thinking, like, if Harry dies, this will be just the end of the world, right? But I like how J.K. Rowling made him die. But it wasn't the way he thought, right? He came back in the end, right? I love that he still died. It's just, you know, he had the chance to come back, which is brilliant.
I don't know about you guys, but I refused to look any further. Like, in the book, at any point while reading that book, I refused to look further in the book to see, like, even the names of the chapters.
Oh, me too.
Not at all. I would cover up the next line with my hand as I was reading.
I used to do that too.
Me too, actually.
I still do that. I'll still do that. If there's something really good, then I'll cover it, because if not, my eyes will just
wander
go
down.
They'll just look.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I'm guilty of doing that as well.
It's horrible. I hate that.
Oh, it's so funny. It makes you think, like, why can't they just print, like, one line per page, for God's sake?
Yeah, right?
In the intense parts, you know, the intense chapters, just one line per page.
Yeah, quit making me. Quit tempting me.
Ah, awesome. All right, so Harry's dead. Chio, bring him back to life.
Yeah, there you go.
It's all up to you.
It's all up to you, buddy.
Chapter 35. King's Cross.
Okay, so now we're going to go to chapter 35, and it's called King's Cross, which is, like, you read that name and you're like, what?
And can I just say something that I just thought of? Does anybody think of, like, Jesus, King's Cross, and, like, resurrection?
Yeah, I was going to...
I think about Jesus a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Does anybody here think of Jesus, you know? But, like, when I see King's Cross, I almost think of it as, like, a biblical thing, and, you know...
That's Jesus so true. He's the King of Kings on the cross.
And he comes back to life, as the Bible stories say, right? He comes back to life.
Yeah.
So I think
it's very... Yeah.
I had a pastor that actually did an entire season of evening classes on Sunday nights about biblical allegories and Harry Potter,
awesome.
And it was, like, the coolest thing ever.
That's awesome. No, it's really cool. But, like,
there's a lot of
it makes me think, like, Harry's, like, almost the king, and he's on the cross, and he's gonna, you know, come back to life here and save everybody, right?
Yep.
Just like Jesus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, it just makes me wonder, like, if maybe Joe chose this. King's Cross is a real place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if maybe J.K. Rowling chose this place on purpose for this purpose at the end, right? Because she planned the whole series out.
I would think she would.
Yeah.
But it's also a symbol of Harry's making a choice about which world he enters, the Muggle one or the Wizarding one, because he belongs to both.
Oh, that's brilliant. Holy crap. Love it.
Yeah. That, I don't know. The King's Cross, you know, the name, it has a cross there. That, I don't know if she went that far. That's
okay, well,
a long way to go.
It's a speculation.
But it you know, it is a pretty awesome coincidence, if that's what it is. You know, you can never be sure with Joe, but still, that just fits so nicely. I have, you know, problems thinking that she planned even, you know, the name of the damn station just that much.
Oh, the damn station.
Yeah, maybe the name of the station she didn't or whatever, but I don't for one second think that Joe didn't take this chapter just as seriously, if not more so, than most of the other chapters in this book. This also is, you know what I mean? So I absolutely believe that she put a lot of thought into this. And yeah, there is correlation, I believe. Maybe, again, maybe not in the title. But in the rest of the chapter, absolutely.
Yeah, because it makes so much sense for it to be King's Cross, you know, without thinking of the, you know, the symbolism of the stuff, but for, you know, because of Harry's history. So it just makes so much sense that, you know, I cannot even think that, you know, there was another reason for that. But, you know, it's awesome. I never thought of that, you know, King's Cross. That's awesome. Anyways, okay, so Harry kind of wakes up. He's not really sure what's happening. He's not even sure if he has a body or, you know. So he just begins seeing what he can do. So by opening his eyes, he finds out that he has eyes. And he finds himself in this place that is, you know, very white. There's kind of a mist going on, but, you know, it's like the mist is still forming stuff. And he finds that he has
no clothes.
Yeah.
No clothes, no scars, no anything. So he's completely, you know, you could say Adam-like, you know, like Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
And
I don't think he even has the lightning bolt scar.
Right.
No.
No, he doesn't.
Not at all.
Wow.
He doesn't. He has no glasses. It's just, you know.
And he can see perfectly?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And he does hear this noise. This, this creature is really ugly creature is making this noise. And as he sees this creature, you know, he starts to feel like he should be wearing clothes because he's not alone there. And just as he thinks about that, some clothes, you know, he can see some clothes. So he just puts them on. And at some point, Dumbledore appears. And now this, like Heather's chapter, you know, not much happens, but it's a really heavy chapter on dialogues and on getting answers and, you know, getting everything that we wanted to know explained.
Yeah.
So, the first thing that, you know, Harry asks Dumbledore is whether he's dead. And Dumbledore explains that, you know, he's probably not dead, that he can go back if he wishes to.
Yeah, and I, you know what, one thing I really dislike about this chapter is really how, and I mean, it's great because it's Dumbledore saying it and it's kind of his character, but I really disliked how ambiguous his statements were, like, what the hell do you mean?
Well, dude, there were times I was saying, that's yourself. How I feel about Dumbledore all the time.
Sorry? What did you say, Heather?
That's how I feel about Dumbledore all the time.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But, like, I feel like in this chapter when it's, like, pivotal, like, we're at the end of the series, for God's sake, it's like, come on, buddy,
God,
explain yourself for once.
Spit it out.
But spit it out, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And also, it's interesting that, you know, you don't really know what's going on here. So, most of the answers, like, Harry wants to know, why am I still alive? And, you know, we don't know if that's actually Dumbledore or if Harry's just imagining that. But so Dumbledore turns to Harry and say, but you know that. What do you think? And Harry comes up with not all the answers, but, you know, a lot of the answers Harry has already maybe, you know, without really thinking about it, figured stuff out. So we found out that Harry's still alive because Voldemort took his blood to come back to life way back in book 4.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that by doing that, Voldemort took Lily's protection and kept it earthbound within himself. So when he killed Harry, that protection was still there. So it's kind of like a Horcrux, but it's a good one.
A good, yeah, like
I'm,
a.
I'm doing thumbs up as I say.
It's true though.
And if you guys remember, way back in book 4, when Harry lets Dumbledore know that, you know, Voldemort used Harry's blood to come back to life, there's just a glimpse of triumph in Dumbledore's eyes that, you know, vanishes really quickly, but that's why we get that, you know, that look in his face, because he knew that, you know, that could mean Harry's salvation in the end. So when Voldemort killed Harry, he actually killed the bit of soul that was still in Harry's body. So we later actually don't ever find that out, but we can pretty much assume that that's the ugly creature just, you know, doing the weird noises there and crying. So that's why Harry can, you know, go back if he chooses to. Okay, so we do kind of get an explanation of why Harry's wand reacted the way it did in the Seven Potters chapter. Because, you know, Dumbledore says that it's a connection thing. So because Harry and Voldemort were already so connected, because Voldemort had Harry's blood, Harry had a little bit of Voldemort's soul, their wands were already, you know, twin cores. And he says that back in book four, at the graveyard, when, you know, they try using their wands against each other, because Harry managed to win, actually, because, you know, he was not afraid to die back then, and Voldemort was. So
yeah,
Harry could actually prevail over Voldemort, and it's kind of like his wand recognized Voldemort as an enemy. It actually got itself stronger. It got some of Voldemort's powers. And that's why when it, at the beginning of the seventh book, when Harry faced Voldemort, the wand recognized Voldemort as a, as, you know, enemy, and was able to produce magic that Harry himself could not, because it worked, it was a strong one to use against Voldemort, but that's for Voldemort alone. Like, Hermione could break Harry's wand. But, like, when Harry breaks his wand, when Hermione breaks Harry's wand, he has this feeling that, you know, that wand had special powers, that with his wand he was somehow more protected against Voldemort. And, you know, that's very much accurate, because that's what his wand was ready to do for him, mm-hmm. defend him against Voldemort. you guys can, you know,
jump.
Anybody has anything?
Don't worry about it. It's really a, it's really like a, this chapter in itself is very much a summarizing chapter. Like,
yeah, it's just it's kind a of, talky chapter.
It is. It's a talky chapter, and it kind of just goes over a lot of, like, it's revealing a lot of things, like my chapter was, you know? And so, I don't know, I find, like, this, there's stuff in this chapter that's difficult to talk about, because it's like, oh, well, that makes sense, and oh, well, that makes sense, and,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And lots of it we already, you know, having known this, because we already read all the books, when we were discussing previous books, we already talked about some of this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyways, Harry also...
I suppose we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harry also asks about Deathly Hallows, and, you know, why did you make it so difficult for me to find it? And, you know, Dumbledore's, I'm just going to go, you know, through all the Hallow stuff. So we get to know that Dumbledore was, in fact, Grindelwald's friend, that he was a little bit naive as, you know, a younger man,
mm-hmm.
and that he did, he was, like, stranded back at his place with his brother and Ariana after, you know, the rest of his family had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And Grindelwald came as a window to, you know, do other stuff, to study, to be great. And so Dumbledore kind of filtered some of the bad stuff that he had seen in Grindelwald and completely, you know, stood by his side. And he went all for it. Yeah, let's just, you know, it's all for the better, the greater good. Let's conquer muggles and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Dumbledore completely, you know, Grindelwald was like, how could I say this? It was a way for Dumbledore to achieve greatness.
Yeah.
And this is, it makes sense when you read the book. It makes even more sense after we found out that, you know, Joe always saw Dumbledore as a gay character.
Yeah.
And we do see that, you know, he might have looked over some of Grindelwald's flaws because he was, you know, so... he cared for him so much.
Yeah, I think Heather and I got into a discussion about this a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And so they were obsessed about the Hallows. They wanted to... Grindelwald wish he had, you know, the others one to conquer. They both wish they had the stone, but for different reasons. Grindelwald probably wanted it to build an army of Inferi, while Dumbledore actually wanted to bring back his father, his mom, and his sister, and, you know, be lifted of all that responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you were saying, Adam, on today on a previous chapter, that, you know, probably the ring had some enchantment that fooled Dumbledore. I don't think that's the case. I do think that he...
oh, yeah, because... Sorry, I forgot it was a hallow.
Right. Jesus.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah. It was a hallow. So that's another... That might be another explanation as to why he wanted to try on the ring.
he wanted to, you know, see his family again. And he wanted to, you know, say, I'm sorry and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The whole scene with Ariana really got to him. So he didn't even think about it. He just tried the ring on, which was really stupid. But you can, you know, see where that came from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. You know, yeah, I really like how this last chapter, well, the chapter before last was kind of Snape's clear-up story. This one is... I like how, you know, this whole chapter, Harry's been doubting Dumbledore and really questioning Dumbledore, and I really love that in this chapter, it all gets cleared up, like, right from Dumbledore's mouth, right? So, but yeah, anyways.
And Harry gets to understand Dumbledore, and he gets to forgive Dumbledore.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Also, Dumbledore says that, you know, Dumbledore was never meant to have all the Hallows, that he only wished the stone to, you know, see his family. But for his own sake. It's not like Harry that, you know, used the ring to see his family, but he used it to gain strength to sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
So Dumbledore just keeps stating how much of a great wizard Harry is, how a great person Harry is, actually.
But I don't think that it's any... I don't think that it's any less great what Dumbledore was feeling at that time. What, you know, I think that it's very justified that he would want to go and find the ring and see his family again and apologize. Yep. Right. Like, I don't feel like this makes Dumbledore any less great than Harry, because Harry has.
Harry had the same thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that because Harry had the same thought. You know, he said that there's a line that, you know, Harry says, well, it's natural. You wanted to see your family because Harry gets that. But it's Dumbledore that says, you know, that, you know, his reasons weren't as noble as Harry's.
Yeah. Okay.
And Harry also goes back and think about way back in book one, when, you know, Dumbledore caught Harry in front of the mirror of Erised.
Mm-hmm.
And he just knew that Harry was seeing his own family. And at the time, Dumbledore said that, you know, he always
sees his family. Himself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He actually does see his family. But at the time, he said that, you know, he sees himself with
a pair of socks
or something like that. Yeah.
And he lied to Harry, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. And Harry, right now, he gets to, you know why Dumbledore was so understanding about Harry wanting to, you know, go see the mirror every night.
And
so
it says in book one, if my memory is correct, it says in book one, after Dumbledore said that, it said that Harry had a flicker of question in that statement, right? Like, he wondered for an instant whether Dumbledore had lied to him. So cool. Yes. Such a great part.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome that, you know,
What?
6 books later, yeah. We get to.
What did I call this? Set up and pay off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling's writing style? Yeah.
True.
So, and we also find out that, you know, Ariana died after a discussion between Dumbledore, Grindelwald, and Aberforth.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that, you know, it took Dumbledore so long to face Grindelwald after, you know, he gained power and was killing all those people, he kept delaying, you know, going dual Grindelwald. And it was because he was so afraid that he would they never discovered who cast the spell that killed Ariana. So he was afraid to go face Grindelwald and discover that it was himself, Dumbledore, that had killed his own sister.
Oh, no.
But he did go to face Grindelwald eventually, but Harry doesn't ask, like...
Yeah, we really don't know...
If it was him.
We really don't know anything about this final duel with Grindelwald and Dumbledore.
Yeah, like, we don't.
We really don't. It's kind of left to question for the reader, actually.
Yeah.
Which, like... I don't know. I don't know if I want to know or whether, you know, if I maybe I'm hoping maybe she'll come out with something on Pottermore or something,
yeah.
Or whether I just want to keep this as kind of an ambiguous thing. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think that we are never going to know.
Okay.
Because if we know, it's like we are going to know stuff that Dumbledore doesn't know. And it that would just be weird.
Yeah, okay,
you know, we would, you know, you see Dumbledore, it wasn't you that did it. And it's just a weird knowledge for us to have and the characters to have.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't think that we're ever going to find out.
To find out, yeah, okay.
No. And what else? And I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I remember anything else that, you know, it's actually revealing. So, after all that, Harry, you know, after Harry stops the questioning, he comes to the conclusion that, you know, he does have to go back because Voldemort's still there. And Dumbledore says, you know, it's totally your choice, but, you know, you have less to fear to come back here than Voldemort does.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do go back, there's a possibility that, you know, much less families are going to die, much fewer people are going to die and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We also find that, you know, Dumbledore's plan was to let the Elder One die, its power die with him. So but actually they don't really say it right now. So
yeah.
I'm just going to leave that for later on.
Okay.
But, you know, we get the hint that, you know, Harry already knows what happened, but we are just going to get that on the next Potter Pensive episode. And
the final Potter Pensive episode?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And so finally, when Harry is, you know, moving towards life again, he turns back to Dumbledore and asks, you know, is this real or is this all happening inside my mind? And Dumbledore just answers that, you know, it's, of course it's happening on your mind, but, you know, why would that make it less real or why wouldn't that mean it's not real?
But like,
and that's the end of the chapter.
I hate that though.
Really?
What
I love
mean?
That line.
Like,
and I'll have you know in the Kindle version.
I think it's okay. Yeah.
No, like 300 and some odd people anyway have already like highlighted that line. I love that line.
Of course it's happening inside your head, Harry, but why on earth should that mean
exactly.
It's not real?
It's because this series is not actually happening. It's all happening in our minds as we read it and in Joe's as we write it, but it's still real to us.
Oh, that's so good. I love it.
That's awesome.
That's so awesome. Did you just come up with that, or did you find that somewhere?
No, that's just what people have been thinking for 6 years. Adam, where have you been?
Sorry.
Where have you been?
Where have you been?
There's one thing, though, that, you know, I found on Wikibooks, and I thought it was really good. When Dumbledore is it's explaining about, you know, the wands and the Elder Wand and you know, how Harry's wand completely destroyed Lucius' wand. You know that line?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, sort okay. of. Yeah.
Okay, so Dumbledore is talking about how Harry's wand destroyed Lucius' wand because Voldemort had to switch wands because he thought that, you know, his own wand wouldn't work against Harry, so he took Lucius'. The thing is, Harry never got to know that that was Lucius' wand, but Dumbledore knew. So, you know, that's maybe a hint that, you know, that was really happened. That was really Dumbledore, because he knew stuff that, you know, Harry didn't. Maybe it's an afterlife kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also all the you know, backstory with Ariana and stuff. So that couldn't possibly come only from Harry's head. So maybe that's...
I don't know. I do think it's a good quote, though. And yeah. It's very fitting that would be the last line we hear from Dumbledore.
Yeah,
it is.
It's yes.
Really good. So, yeah, I guess that's it. Hey?
Yay.
That's it.
Hey.
Whew, 2 chapters left. So who's going to take the last chapter and who's going to take the epilogue?
I think it's fitting that, you know, you and Heather.
Well, I was going to say the same thing.
I don't know.
Seriously.
I don't know if I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that, though.
So, fine.
I think it's fitting.
I don't know.
You guys started.
I'd kind of like the epilogue, personally.
Okay, well, okay.
We'll see.
You can take the epilogue. All right, okay. You can take the epilogue. All right, I will agree to take the last chapter if you take the epilogue.
Okay.
Because I don't want to... I don't know. I just have this... I don't know what's wrong with me. I just have, like, this thing in my head where, like, I don't want to be the last one to end it. I don't know.
So,
but, yeah, okay. I'll take the last chapter, then, if you take the epilogue.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, anyways, that was our last full chapters episode, and then... Wow. Holy crap.
I'm so hungry.
Are you hungry? Yes, and there's food. So anyways, okay, that's great. I'm just going to quickly go over the contact information. You can visit our website at potterpensive.com for all of our previous episodes and show notes. And you can also download... Yeah, you can download all of the episodes there, which I will be uploading right to the website when we finish the podcast, so you can just all get them from there. You can also email us your feedback, so your questions, comments, suggestions, queries, and theories for our final episode next Wednesday. And you can do that to potterpensive@gmail.com, or if you'd like to be lazy, you can click on the Contact Us page and fill out the little form there. Join our Facebook group. There's a link on the website. Also, follow us at PotterPensive on Twitter. And finally, leave us a rating on iTunes. And yeah, I'm not even going to say subscribe to us anymore because we're...
Yeah.
We've got 2 more
no
episodes
point.
Left. No
Don't
point.
Bother.
Go visit the website, download all of our 60-something episodes, and, you know, enjoy yourself. Enjoy our 4-year...
Enjoy the Potterism.
Adventure. Enjoy the Potterism. That's right. So, until our film commentary for the last film, without further ado, Nitwit.
Blubber.
Oddman.
Tweak.
See you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Later, alligator. Bye.